I can create beautiful things, constructing things with the it's not necessary to be a very developed industrial country to be a designer, you know, because I'm a survivor also, you know.
Hi, I'm Dan Rubenstein, and this is The Grand Tourist. I've been a design journalist for nearly 20 years, and this is my personalized guided tour through the worlds of fashion, art, architecture, food, and travel. All the elements of a well-lived life. Brazilian designer Humberto Campana is one of the most influential creatives of the 21st century. For more than 30 years, his work was instrumental in the evolution of design as we know today. Of course, as many of you might know, until the tragic passing of his brother Fernando, they were known simply as the Campana brothers. Their work often shocked and tickled those with strict modernist tendencies. In the world of the Campanas, stuffed animals could be sewn together to make an armchair. Scraps of fabric could be turned into collectible works sold for princely sums. Fernando died at age 61 in 2022, and his brother Humberto now carries on their legacy. Not to mention the impressive machine behind him today called Estudio Campana. As you'll learn on the show today, Humberto didn't plan on being a designer at all. His breakout work in the 80s with his brother, the so-called uncomfortable chairs, were iron works with spikes, swirls, and sharp edges. It certainly got people talking. Their next star design, which we'll also speak about, was the Vermella chair, where a simple metal frame is wrapped endlessly with a bright red cord to form a seat. Again, it challenged the notion of just what design was really all about. And if you've ever been told by some designer looking for fame because they hired local workers in their hometown to make their glamorous products, they probably got that idea from the Campanas. To this day, his studio in Brazil trains local craftsmen to produce their highly collectible works, often sourcing mundane objects and materials, spinning another man's waste into design gold. In 2022, the Italian brand Paola Lenti, known for their colorful outdoor furniture, collaborated with the brothers on a massive, one-of-a-kind amorphous seating blobs in bright colors called Metamorphosi, sewn together from industrial fabric scraps. Today, Estudio Campana tackles its first solo show with Humberto at the helm that just opened here in New York at Friedman Benton Gallery called On the Road. That features sofas made from upcycled polystyrene used in packaging, along with leather and sheepskin, as well as mirrors framed in aluminum sourced from industrial scraps. I caught up with Humberto from his studio in Brazil to talk about his youth as a gay kid in a conservative family during the trying years of Brazilian dictatorship, how an article in Domus magazine turned the uncomfortable chairs from a joke into the hot new thing in design, the story about how their first stuffed animal chairs came to be, and more. So I wanted to start with you in the beginning. I read that you were raised in Brotas, which is about 150 miles northwest of Sao Paulo. And I'm wondering, what was life like for you there as a young child? What do you remember?
It was my treasure as well, my hell, you know, both. Because since I was a kid, I read born with this intuition, with sensibility to arts. But never, my family was a small bourgeois family. My mother was a primary teacher. My father, agronomic engineer. So we are very, also during the military dictatorship in Brazil. So it was a seat completely away from everything, you know. I didn't like to be there, but at the same time I had to create my own universe, you know, in order to make my own toys. So the nature was gorgeous there, is still gorgeous. So my contact with nature was very close, you know, and this was very important to me in order to work on this, you know. I like to make gardens, to plant trees, to create houses in trees with bamboo, making swimming pools in small creeks with rocks. So since all the beginning, my hands on, you know. At the same time, we have the movie theater there from a guy, an Italian guy, who moved to that small city, and he had a good taste, you know, so he brought all the movies from neorealismo italiano, Brazilian cinema novo, western, American western, Tarzan, circus, Doris Day, whatever, you know, Ben-Hur. So in the evening I was in the movie theater. During the day was very boring. I start to create the sceneries, that things that I saw in the movies with Fernando, my brother. We are very close.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, obviously you said that you made toys for yourself, and obviously, you know, knowing your work now where you work with unconventional materials, obviously that, I'm curious, like, what was your favorite toy that you made when you were growing up?
It was a tent, an indigenous tent, because I want to be indigenous, you know. I refuse to use shoes to go to the school, and I want to live in Amazon, you know, because the trees, all the indigenous artifacts. So one day my father gave me a structure of a cathedral. My father made a cathedral, like the Brasilia Cathedral in the 60s, for something, the church, you know. And he gave away when finished the event. So I covered with straw that cathedral. That was indigenous oka, my indigenous house there.
When we talk about, you know, mid-century modernism in Brazil and the 60s and everything, how would you describe the sort of the culture in Brazil at the time? What was that like? If I were to go in a time machine and go back to when you were 13 years old, like, how would you describe the scene in Brazil?
Well, I wasn't conscious about that, but there was in the air this magic of the Brazil is the country of the future. You know, when I was 13 years old, Brasília was inaugurated in the 60s. So it was a huge development, industrial also development in Brazil, you know. The capital moving from Rio to Brasília. All the companies, the Chevrolet, Ford, coming to Brazil to construct cars and trucks. The industrialization. So we need to do furniture for all the Brasília and the other apartments in Rio de Janeiro. So it was a huge kind of hope in the air, you know. All the masters, from modernist masters, coming to Brazil from the Second World War, running away from the Nazis. They established here in São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro. So they brought all this spirit, modernist spirit in Brazil. That's still very present, you know. If you go to downtown São Paulo, it's a museum of modernism buildings, you know, all abandoned. It's beautiful. Yeah, it was very interesting, very beautiful, that moment, until the dictature in the 64. So they start already going to other places, you know, things start to be harder here.
And what was life like for you under the dictatorship?
It was very scary, you know, very, very scary, because some people from my family had disappeared. I was 14 years
really?
Old, yeah. So my father told, no, never go to the students. It was kind of very, you know, I tried to be not involved with this, you know, because it was really, people talk about you if you on the phone, if they listen conversation. It was very, very scary, you know.
And I mean, that might even connect to my next question, is how, you know, you studied law before going into art and design, and with you and your brother, I think studied architecture. And so why did he study architecture and why did you study law? How did that happen?
Well, myself, I study law because I didn't want to. I never, you know, I was completely lost when I had to to make up my mind to go to a school, a university. So I moved to São Paulo and I chose the easiest career, law, because there was no mathematics I had a huge problem with mathematics. So not to be an architect that I would love to be, because there was necessary a lot of knowledge about mathematics. There is no computer at that time. So I went to the school, but the first day of law, I told to myself, this is not my family, this is not my place, you know. But I stayed there 5 years in order to, and when I finished, I gave my family the diploma, the graduation, and I told to myself, I want to construct my life with my own hands, yeah. And I would, because I always, since that, and at that time was trying to be a sculptor, you know, I always have great passion for sculpture. All the Henry Moore here in Brazil, Brecheret, the modernist sculptors. So I want to be a sculptor when I moved from law to my career.
and I read that you started with doing some of your own design projects for friends, and that's how things kind of started with your own studio. And were those first projects, you know, design projects, or were they more, as you mentioned, sculpture, or like what were they?
No at all, you know, no at all, because I moved to Bahia when I finished, because Bahia in the 70s, it was a place for freedom, you know. Mick Jagger, Janis Joplin, Rolling Stones, they always went there, you know, in Salvador. And I moved to a beach, near the beach, in Itabuna, a place near the beach. And a friend of mine from my hometown was living there. So I lived with him. He was an architect. So he started giving, he told me, why don't you make some frames for mirrors from my clients? So, let's do it. I went to the beach, start collecting seashells, you know, and creating frames of mirrors with seashells. And, you know, the first mirror was very nice, you know, it was kind of, it was very naive, of course, but well done, you know, well made. And I kind of like it. I stay 1 year there. Then I move back to São Paulo and start, in order to making a living, I start to selling all these objects in shops here in São Paulo. And one day, Fernando, my brother, he came from a Christmas delivery. The end of the year, he was finishing the architecture, and he went to give him a helping hand. This was 84, and he kept going, you know. He started to, and he had good taste, you know. He had studied architecture, so he started to changing, you know, all these very kitsch objects, you know, very in order to good taste, you know, make some cleaning and make, and then we start doing things, you know. Why don't you do other, go deeper into this, you know? And then 84 was the turning point from law, from the crafts, from to the what we are today, what I am today. But I'm still I'm still consider myself as an artisan, you know. I love to work with the hands. I don't refuse that past. You know, for me, it's important to bring that past, because it is what I am now. It was what I am now today.
And, you know, when your brother joined you, was that a natural thing at first? I mean, did you guys fight at all? Did, or, you know, disagree in the beginning about what you were going to do and what direction you were going to take?
A lot, you know. Yeah, all the time. But it was wonderful because we're friends, you know. We are very good friends, very, and yeah, we quarrel a lot. And and that was very good, because our quarrels were in order to make a good project, you know. We try to, no, this is better this way, and it was magic, you know, very magic, our relationship. I remember he was in the end of the day. He brought a little of pots, and we start with smoke. Then we start drawing. You know, was listening to music, and it was, you know, it was, yeah, it was very good because, yeah. And you know, it was kind of fun. Two kids, you know, playing. And until last year, you know, was like this, you know.
At the beginning, when you guys start making furniture together, how, you know, you're using these sort of commonplace elements. They're not seashells, but you're using these other kind of pieces. And your kind of your style starts to emerge. Do you remember, was there ever a point where you and your brother were working together where something clicked, where something started to really become something I would recognize today as?
Okay. Well, it was the year of 89 when at that time I was taking sculpture courses in on iron welding. And just make a parenthesis, it was the year of 88 when I did a trip on Colorado River, a journey of 15 days rafting in the Colorado River with the group of Esalen Institute. It was a workshop with the Esalen Big Sur to go rafting in the Colorado River and sleep in the desert. It was a changed my life, this journey. And one day my boat flipped, the boat flipped over. Yeah, and my lifeguard was open, and I got inside a whirlpool. Everybody moved, they saved themselves, and I saw all that going there, and myself stay in that whirlpool that I was got dead, you know. And miraculous, I got saved. And the same day, I make a design of a chair on iron that was a spiral, a vortex. So I came to Brazil, I realized I made this chair on iron myself, and I cut a very thick blade of iron with fire. And the piece that came out from this chair, Fernando made another chair. This is our beginning, you know, very, very beginning. And 89, 80s was the end of the military dictature here in Brazil. So it was a moment that we could speak, we could express ourselves. So me and Fernando, we designed a collection of chairs, and with the title Uncomfortables. Very rust, very brutalist, very anger, you know, because we put our anger, it was a vomit against all the military, the hate that we have of these people that has done in Brazil, you know. So it was a vomit. Because also we didn't want to follow. We are looking for the Brazilian roots. The imperfection, the chaos, all these elements that consists the Brazilian diversity. We brought in that collection. And that was our beginning, 89, you know, starting USA in the Grand Canyon, the project, and then São Paulo with the title. And it was it.
Was that trip on the river? Was that your first time in the United States?
No. I had a relationship with an American, a guy for 26 years. So I was used to go a lot to USA, and travel to Santa Fe by car, Yellowstone, and all these amazing places in USA. Yeah, I love beauty.
Before we return to Umberto, a word from our sponsor, Viegra. Sometimes in the world of design, someone creates a legacy so powerful that it creates a style all its own, one that endures, thrives, and evolves. the French House of Liègre, founded by legendary talent Christian Liègre, carries on the creative ethos of its founder in furnitures, interiors, and yachts. From its headquarters in Paris, with a focus on timeless modernism and an elevated palette of materials, textures, and craftsmanship. The latest project of the house is close to the hearts of any lover of travel and design, the Coste Liègre Capsule Collection. In 2015, Jean-Louis Coste entrusted Christian with the redesign of the Hotel Lotti, nestled between the Tuileries Garden and the Place Vendôme. Today, it's an icon of luxury travel and of Paris as the fashion and design capital of the world. The five-star hotel's redesign was completed in 2020 after Christian's passing, and the collection includes many of the bespoke pieces created for the suites and public spaces. My favorite would have to be the Cambon chair. This iconic piece is a backrest covered in tightly woven straw and exemplifies the legacies of both the hotel and the House of Liègre. Elegant, comfortable, and with a sense of timeless modernity. For more information about the collection or any piece from the extensive catalog of Liègre, visit StudioLiègre.com. That's StudioLiègre.com. And when you first created your uncomfortable chairs, which are, you know, to this day, I think you could show them as new and no one would be the wiser. They would look new today, which I think is a testament to them. With those uncomfortable chairs, I'm curious, did you have any pushback at the time? Did anybody look at them in the art world or the design world and like say, oh, I don't like, you know, I don't get it. I don't like it. Or I think this is, you know, was in your first, the first couple of years when you're doing new work, but you're not famous yet. I mean, did people push back on you at all? Yeah.
A lot, you know. It was very controversial because we didn't sell, you know. First of all, we are still doing, meanwhile we are doing those chairs, we are still doing the baskets, the shelves, you know. It was very kind of bipolar, you know, because one side very looking for the future and the other very commercial, very the taste, very bad taste, you know, in order to sell. No, all the time, you know. And it was the turning point. It was a journalist, an Italian journalist, Marco Romanelli. He came to São Paulo to do a lecture here at MASP, invited by Pietro Maria Bardi, the husband of Lina Bobardi. He came and we brought our furniture to him. And he made an article on Domus, 6 pages, about our work. So that was the, you know, it was necessary, Italian, to put our name in the design community in order to Brazilians start to pay attention, respect us, because we were considered one of a kind. And the people kind of joke with us, the uncomfortable brothers, they kind of irony with us, you know.
You know, when you were first starting out, were your parents trying to tell you like, listen, you have a law degree, go be a lawyer. What are you doing? Is this crazy? Did you with your brother as well? Because obviously, you know, the two of you working together, that meant, you know, the brother was also in the same building.
You know, Fernando was easier because we are 8 years age difference. So I kind of open, you know, for him the path. You know, my family at the time, they didn't speak with me. We stayed 2 years without speaking. It was, they were very mad and sad with me. But it was necessary, you know, to cut the cords with them. You know, imagine, because they were very conservative, you know, a family with military, with doctors, engineers, teachers, very Italian, you know, the Italians that came from Italy, from fascism, you know, there was this Catholic, you know, very, and myself, gay, that I never thought about then, that I was gay, you know, try to hide all these years. it was very difficult for me, you know. With I didn't like to play football. I didn't like to. I like to read, to make plant trees, to construct objects. I wasn't well. In my hometown, people watch me with another eyes, you know. It was a lot of bullying that I suffered for being very sensitive, you know.
Yeah, wow. And in 1993, you guys had this kind of breakthrough again in the design, I would say the greater design world, with the Vermella chair. If I'm pronouncing that correctly, which is kind of like a metal frame with hundreds of feet of rope, a bright red rope kind of wrapped around it that kind of creates a seat. And it was eventually manufactured by Edra, but I'm not sure how that chair happened, because that seems to be a step beyond kind of even the uncomfortable chair. And it seems to be like really kind of another kind of connection, which we would say, oh, obviously that is, you know, such a component product.
You know, 1993 is the base. We did an exhibition named, I don't remember the name, but it was the base of what we do today, because in that exhibition, there was a lot of materials, cords, cardboard, TV antennas, aluminum, charcoal, all these elements were in this exhibition. It was the base what we do today, because we are the uncomfortable brothers, né? And we want to bring comfort. We don't want to stay in this easy formula of cut a piece of metal and no, I want to go further, go deeper. And we choose the materials. Then our eyes start looking for comfort. So we start looking materials that could give comfort, very light, like the aluminum wires or the aluminum TV rods or cardboards or cords. And one day we are walking around in São Paulo. We bought a bunch of ropes, but without knowing what to do with this, you know. I like to have a flirt with the material all the time, you know. I buy materials, and we bought a bunch of ropes. Then we brought to our studio, and this bunch of rope, deconstruct in front of our eyes, me and Fernando. And one stared to the other, look, oh, this can be a chair, you know. Imagine, Fernando, if I construct a metal structure and start weaving this. And we did it, you know. So we did a metal structure, and I started weaving it, but no regular, because I hate mathematics. I hate rationality. And I want to, no, this is possible also, you know, to deconstruct, to be chaotic, like something melting. And that was a very great impact on us, you know, on people's eyes also.
I can only imagine what showing the Vermella chair for the first time at the Salone next to all of these Italian designers. And I can only imagine, and I'm from Brazil, and here is my chair, and is made from just wrapped up rope.
It was amazing.
I can only imagine.
1 year earlier, Marco Romanelli, the journalist, he created a round table at Palazzo Reale in Milano and invited all the masters of minimalism design, Constantin Krieg, Sebastian Bern, I don't know who else, all the German minimalism. And we, Fernando, we brought our talk was about cardboard chairs, charcoal. They kind of look at us, you know, with irony. You know, they didn't say nothing, you know. They just looking at us. I remember the smile, you know, ironic smiles on their faces, you know. And we are still here today, you know. I am still in the design scene. You are making interviews with me, you know, because they look as if like, oh, you are going to disappear soon, you know. It was very funny. That was the reaction, you know, from the minimalist designers.
So, you know, you've had this incredible career, and obviously this is a question that everybody gets asked. Have you come up with your own definition of the difference between art and design?
I don't, no, never, you know, because I'm a storyteller. My work is about making portraits of the experience that happens to me, things that attracts my eyes, you know, and then I want to tell of that experience or that moment. I want to crystallize those images or experience catharsis into objects, you know. But I never once tried to define myself. Even today, you know, is something out of my, it's a way that I do in order to have mental equilibrium. Yeah, for life has a, you know, the world nowadays is so bad, you know. So Argentina, that horrible president was elected, is going to be the second Bolsonaro. And I told to myself, if I construct my life, if I have nothing will change with me, you know, because I am going to be serious and focus on my work, and this will save me from this, the planet, you know, all this. I try to do my best, you know, planting trees, I'm constructing a park, if I can speak to you later, if you, you know, a foundation in order to preserve nature and the design heritage. So, you know, yeah, I try to work and don't pay attention, don't get, of course, I'm very sad, you know, all these things happening in front of my eyes, and it's so sad, you know, yeah.
Do you look around your home and wonder, where am I going to put everything? The Grand Tourist certainly does. My collection of lucky Japanese cats, my 4 dozen brooches of varying levels of flair, not to mention my extensive collection of vintage magazines and other baubles collected from a lifetime of little grand tours around the world. If you find yourself in such a dilemma, California Closets can help. Their design experts will collaborate with you to create a custom storage solution based on your needs, your aesthetic, and your budget. So whether you're looking for a harder working closet, storage room for your collectibles, or a multi-purpose studio, California Closets knows how to make room for what belongs. Plus, it's easy to get started. First, schedule a free design consultation and their designer will talk about your needs, measure your space, and create a 3D rendering that shows you the best way to optimize functionality. They'll work with you to refine the design until it's exactly what you want. And after building it, they'll install it with their own team of professionals. After all, the Grand Tourist knows many things, but how to use a hammer and nail, not exactly. Think of it as practical magic, a series of spells even a podcaster with 20 years of experience could never cast on his own. Learn more at californiaclosets.com. And when it comes with these sort of stuffed animal chairs, you know, which may be in the Encyclopedia of Design in the future, when they under the name of you and your brother, this is like what might be like seen as the classic chair. I'm curious how that started. How did you decide to do that, and how did that happen?
That was the year of 2000, the beginning of this century. We're looking for to create furniture without the traditional methods of upholstery. You know, where that was the seed in my mind, you know, looking, I don't want a metal structure or we. And then one day there is a guy selling plushes in front of, passing in front of our studio with a bunch of alligators, lions, whatever, like a Carmen Miranda, you know, red hat. And I looked, I bought all the plushes. I brought to a studio, start to stitching one to the other, myself. And Fernando, he designed the metal also again. Fernando is the, was the designer. And I made one, then start to selling to Moss, Murray Moss. He was the one who started selling at Moss, which was a fantastic shop at Green Street. And yeah, that started being a big success. And it was very good, you know, because at that time, a guy from Canada came to us before, it was a parenthesis, he asked us, I'm doing an article in a magazine in Toronto, I don't remember, and please, would you like to send all your projects that were never produced? And me and Fernando, we sent to him this project, and he started doing copying this and selling at Moss, at Murray. And there was a question, someone, my magazine here in Brazil, started looking who had copied who, you know. And it was proved. We have all the emails that we changed with, all the emails, no fax. That time was fax. And we proved that our, and at the same year, Edra, the Italian brand, was supposed to produce these plush chairs. And they cut this, and that was very good for us, you know, because from this chair we start to producing the chair in my studio. We start to earning money because up that chair we still, life was very difficult for us, you know, still no car, bank, no money at bank. And with this chair, we start producing my studio. Then it start to bring people from fashion to manufacture. And the studio start to being a kind of laboratory, you know. Start to getting their actual status, you know, of a laboratory of research and doing, that was, and Moz started to selling more and more, and was.
I'm curious, like, you know, you've had such a prolific career, and as you explain how the stuffed animal chair, when it started to take off, and you became more of a laboratory, and you became more of an art studio rather than pursuing design as production design, that was when you really started to become, comfortable, or just even to make the proper living, as you said, like you didn't have any money before and all that stuff. So I'm curious, was that decision something that you enjoyed, or did you think that it was at the time when you first started, you think that it was a step down? Because before, craft, right, was not as put on a pedestal as we do today. And, you know, to see that all of a sudden you're not going to have your chairs mass produced, then you're not making a, you know, quote unquote, real career. Like at first, were you like, oh no, we're taking a step backwards rather than forwards?
It's what kind of this, you know, yeah. Because we want to be industrial designers, you know. I want to be minimalist. I want to be those guys, you know. We want to be the industrial designers. But, you know, it was fun because how life writes things in a way of mistakes, but at the end, you know, is the right thing, you know. I remember Karim Rashid once came to São Paulo in a lecture. He told, no, the Campana brothers are not designers. Karim Rashid, well, people, yeah, kind of put us, yeah, was putting us aside, you know, didn't.
Yeah, we bothered like a lot of people.
And today, this is precious because I don't know who I am, you know, which is amazing, you know. I like to create things, you know. Last week, I was painting the head of a friend who has cancer. She asked me to paint her. And I love it, you know. I discovered a new way of expressing myself, you know. Yeah.
I think if you started a hair salon in New York, you'd make a killing.
Yeah, it would be. I love you, know. I really love. I'm gonna send to you the video, myself painting.
And I would say, you know, even though you're about the sort of narrative and this sort of idea and communicating your culture, and but you still do work in design. I mean, you still have design clients, and so especially Paola Lenti with the Metamorphosis, this amazing chair and a seating system that is so unmistakably yours. How do you like to work with? Tell me about that project, and also, how do you like to? I'm sure now when people work with you in design, they know what they're getting into, and they know what they're probably going to get. So how did that happen with Paola Lenti, and what was that like?
It was fantastic, you know, because it was the end of the coronavirus epidemic. And one day she called me, her assistant called me, "Are you interested in working with our things that we don't, our fabrics or our materials to create a line of collection and a project that works with a community of immigrants in Milan?" Well, I love that, you know, because I was begging for this to communicate that a brand like Paola Lenti can reuse all the. So she sent me three boxes of fabrics, cords, ropes, whatever, you know, very colorful. For me, it was like a treasure was arriving into my studio, you know, all those beautiful fabrics. It was amazing, you know, such amazing project. And then we start to changing this, you know, the codification, transforming ropes into fabrics. It was fantastic. And we send her back. She started producing in this with this NGO in Milan. It was amazing project, you know. And there are two sisters, you know, Paola and her daughter, her sister, and me and Fernando. Was a very good combination. And also to communicate, also to contaminate this project, other brands, you know, in order not to throw away. That was fantastic because I had this possibility, you know, political possibility to show this is possible, you know. So all the material, starting from the cushions, from the upholstery, is all made with the leftovers, you know, from the company. It's a very honest project, so all the since the beginning.
And you mentioned something about a park and a new initiative that you have going on, which I that you mentioned. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Tell me about that project.
11 years ago, we created an Instituto Campana, in order to promote the rescuing traditions, manual traditions, promoting. Giving better life income to non-privileged people. We still work today with those people. And I was used to teach in favelas here in São Paulo, all before the pandemic. And with the pandemic, everything was closed. And I started going to the countryside, my hometown, that we heritage a piece of land, me and Fernando. And it was completely abandoned because I always refused that my history in that place, you know, my family has passed away, so no connection. And I come back there, start to, well, why don't, I told to myself and Fernando, we have teachers all over the world, you know, in schools, we gave workshops, why don't we create a place where people can come here and learn about design, environmental issues, you know. So we start to creating pavilions, green pavilions, planting pavilions made where the plants construct the architectural. So we start doing this, planting trees, and then we are collaborating with a scientist of São Paulo University in order to, he is going to put a laboratory in this place in order to regenerate the nature, where there will be a restaurant for people to eat the food that's planted there. And, you know, it's a huge project, you know, that we are involved in order to give away to the city. Me and Fernando, the idea is to, you know, like a foundation where people can make internship about design or environmental. I can send you all the information to you, you know, because it's my future, you know. I see myself completely devoted to. There is still 6 pavilions constructed, and there will be more 6. Because I had a dream that in the pandemic, that I need to create a link between Italy, my heritage, my family, you know, and in Brotas, Brazil. And I dream about the Etrurian seats, the 12 Etruscan seats from the antiquity.
Etruscan.
Because my family came from Tuscany, where the Etruscans were there. So I want to make this crazy dream, you know, that I'm very intuitive, you know. I had this dream and I want to
see it happen.
Construct 12 pavilions that symbolize this connection with Italy that opened my doors, you know, and a place where people can learn, you know, healing, a place where people can use the, with no shoes, you know, taste the water, the smell of the plants, because they're, the animals are going there. So it's a healing place.
This is obviously a very sensitive question, and I don't blame you if maybe you want to skip over it, but I was wondering if you could share one memory of your brother in design or not in design, could be the most simple thing that you think tells us about the kind of person that he was and what he meant to you.
Fernando was always, he passed away with 62 years old. He still thought he was an enfant terrible, you know. He always, Fernando, you are so old, you want to be an enfant terrible. Yes, he was very stubborn. Yeah, he was amazing, you know, because he was a genius, you know, because he didn't want to be, I love the process. Going every day to the studio, working, stay with my people here, you know. No, he refused. He stayed. He was lazy, you know. He stayed in his house. Sometimes he comes here. I don't like this. I like this. You know? But with a fresh eyes, you know, he wasn't not contaminated. So he brought all this energy, chaotic energy, you know. He was very chaotic. There was some lectures that I made with him. In the middle of the audience, he started to, no, this is not true what we're telling. He was used to put me in bad situations, you know. Enfant terrible, you know. He was always acting like this, you know. And it was amazing because we were so, there was a love between us, you know. My family passed away, my mom and dad, but I still miss him, you know, because he take me out of the comfort zone every day, you know. It was, to be with him, it was a normal day, you know. And he came with ideas. It's interesting because nowadays I'm working with a material that when on his last days, he was showing to me, and I told him, no, Fernando, this, I don't like this material, which is the aluminum leftover. And one day he passed away, and 4 months later, I had a dream I was constructing something with that material. And now I got all the spirit, you know, I mean, I'm constructing a lot of working with this aluminum from leftovers. It's fun because he's still, he's present. You know, I feel him near me, pointing. It's crazy, you know, which is good, you know, because, yeah, life is not about this, you know, still, I believe, you know, it's been happening, so many things that connects with him, you know, and, yeah.
You know, I'm curious, you know, when you talk about this this project and creating something in Brazil that connects to your past and to your family's past, do you think about where the future of your studio is going to go? Do you see, you know, what are the next, have you ever planned the next 20 years of your career? Have you want to do more things that are rooted in where you are rather than doing what you've been doing, you know, with projects in different places of the world? Or
no, I'm still, you know, since the Fernandos passed away, more than ever I'm very strong, you know. It was necessary 1 year to go to the bottom of the everything. Now I'm coming back with very a lot of inspiration, strength, you know. I'm creating a collection for Friedman Banda that I will present in New York, you know, with new materials, you know, adobe and aluminum leftovers. And the park, next year, we are going to celebrate our 40th anniversary of Studio Campana. We start 84. So we are working on a documentary with Francesca Montani and Maria Cristina Diderot. They are shooting some interviews. We are launching a book about Campana way of doing things, you know. And also we are going to open the park. Part of our will be symbolic because all the money, all the investments comes from my pockets, me and Fernando, up to now. And we are, as a big project, we are looking for sponsors that one day they will come, you know. I'm positively sure, because I don't want to earn money with this, you know. I always ask inspiration. If I have inspiration, I'm okay, you know. I have a nice life, you know, a nice studio. I have a nice people working with me, but I don't want, you know, more and more. That's not my goal, you know. I want to be young, mentally young, my goal.
Thank you to our guest, Humberto Campana, and to Silvia Lunazzi and everyone at Studio Campana for making this episode happen. The editor of The Grand Tourist is Stan Hall. To keep this going, don't forget to visit our website and sign up for our newsletter, The Grand Tourist Curator, at thegrandtourist.net. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Dan Rubenstein. And don't forget to follow The Grand Tourist on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen, and leave us a rating or comment. Every little bit helps. Till next time.